2023 was momentous in the fight against fraud. It saw the passing of the Online Safety Act and the Financial Services and Markets Act, both of these happening after years of exhaustive campaigning from us here at Which? But the battle against scams is far from over. Stay in the know and avoid falling victim to scammers by joining over 450,000 others who have signed up to our Which Scam Alerts. To sign up, head to which.co.uk/scamalert today.
When life gives you questions, Which? Get answers.
Welcome to the Which Money Podcast, your weekly hit of money news and personal finance hacks to help make you better off. I'm your host, Lucia Ariano, and here's what's coming up this week.
Maybe make a list of all your savings, current accounts, investment accounts. Gathering all the relevant paperwork and other important records in one place will really help speed things up.
I've been dealing with this area now myself for over 15 years, and not a lot has changed. And I think it needs to be something more said and done.
They asked me for my telephone password, and they said, no, that's not your password. It transpired they wanted my sister's telephone password, and they would only speak to my sister on the phone. I said, well, this is ludicrous. You've asked me to ring you, and now you won't speak to me.
This week on the podcast, we're talking about one of the most important documents of our financial lives, and that's power of attorney. It's a legal document that allows someone else to make decisions on your behalf. Now, today we'll be discussing why you need it and how it works, but also how it's falling short, uncovering the struggles people are facing and everything you need to know about registering and using these crucial documents. And to bring us up to speed, I'm pleased to say I'm joined by Which Money Podcast regular, Which journalist, Grace Witherden. And we're also joined by Sam Cox, a senior knowledge officer at Alzheimer's Society. Hello, both.
Hi, Lucia.
Hi.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. So, shall we start at the top then? Power of attorney. It's a familiar term we hear a lot, along with how important they are. But, Grace, what exactly is it?
So, a power of attorney is a legal document where one person, the donor, will give at least one other person, the attorney, the right to make decisions on their behalf. Now, in England and Wales, we use a lasting power of attorney, and this can cover property and financial affairs, as well as health and personal welfare. Both of these documents must be registered with the Office of the Public Guardian before they can be used, and they cost £82 each. In Scotland, the equivalents are called continuing and welfare power of attorney, and that costs £85 to register with the Scottish Office of the Public Guardian. And Northern Ireland uses the older enduring power of attorney system. This is what we used to use in England and Wales before the lasting power of attorney system came in. In Northern Ireland, you can use this for property and financial affairs, and it costs £165 to set up, and it must be registered with the High Court.
And Sam, it would be great to hear a bit more from you on this. Could you explain, who needs a power of attorney and why they're so important?
You can actually argue that everybody needs a power of attorney. Working at the Alzheimer's Society, we do encourage everybody following a diagnosis of dementia to make a power of attorney. And the reason for that is because with an illness such as dementia, it does affect people's cognitive abilities. Mm. And generally, somebody will at some point become unable to make some, and at some point even all, decisions for themselves. And so by setting up a power of attorney, you are then sort of empowering yourself to choose who you would like to make those decisions for you. But obviously dementia is just one illness that can affect cognitive abilities. There's so many other things that can happen, injuries, illnesses. And that's why really anybody at any point of their lives over the age of 18 can make a power of attorney and maybe should consider doing so.
And we've heard kind of the outline of costs here, but can we have a bit more detail about how it works in practice? So how you set one up and then actually how you use the document. Grace, how does it all work?
So in the case of England and Wales, it must be registered with the Office of the Public Guardian. If you're in Scotland, it needs to be registered with the Scottish OPG, and in Northern Ireland, it must be registered with the High Court. Now, there's a lot of steps to go through. So I would really recommend that anyone that wants information about how to set up these documents go on our website, because we have a very detailed guide explaining the process, how much it costs and all the steps.
So in England and Wales, you can prepare the document online. And I'll be honest, it is actually quite an easy toolkit to use, the government online sort of version of the forms. Mm. And we actually have a support service here at the Alzheimer's Society that can help people with that as well. But once the documents are ready, currently, you do actually have to print them off and sign them and send them in. Equally, if you don't feel comfortable when using a computer, you can still use the paper forms. Mm-hmm. And again, sort of get them signed and send them in. There is plans to try to solely move it to an online system, but they're not yet in place. So they will still require people to sign the forms, even if they've set them up online.
Yeah, so at the minute, particularly in England and Wales, the Office of the Public Guardian said, please allow up to 20 weeks. So, you know, it's actually not a quick process. And because it can take up to 20 weeks, it's definitely always one of those things that it's worth thinking about a bit in advance of when you actually might need it, because you have no control over when that's going to be registered once it's sent off.
That's a good point, really. I mean, Sam, do you often find that people tend to think about getting a power of attorney when they really need one right there and then? But really, I'm hearing from you both that it should be something that's done really in advance.
It is a planning ahead document, so you have to have mental capacity. That's the ability to make that decision, to be able to make one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, often we do see it's when capacity's starting to waver that people start to think about it. And that is concerning, because you need people that want to make this decision, that can make this decision to make it. But yeah, going back to that registration process, 20 weeks is a long time. A lot can happen in that time. Mm. And, you know, we see people that might make it and they might think, oh, I'm not going to register it quite yet. I'll leave it, you know, until I need it or until it's needed, at which point it could be too late.
Are you able to change the person who you put down as the one or two people who can act on your behalf at a later date, or does it have to be one person and kind of stay as one person?
You can remove people at a later date, but you can't add any new attorneys. Right. The only way to do that would be to make a brand new power of attorney, which is possible. Mm-hmm. We help people with that all the time. So if people do change their mind, they can make a new one.
Well, you've brought me on to something I wanted to ask you about, and that's the massive point of, you know, choosing the right person to act on your behalf, who is also willing to. You know, it must play a huge part in the decision, and I'm sure you've got plenty of advice around this.
Yeah, this is one of the hardest things. And I say I've been very honoured to actually sit with people and have this conversation. And it is an honour to be chosen, you know, to entrusted to have this conversation with somebody. But it's so hard. You meet people that think, because I'm appointing one daughter, I've got to appoint my other children. Because I'm appointing this person, I've got to appoint this person. And it's about you. It's about what you want. And most importantly, it's about who you trust to do it. You shouldn't be appointing people because you feel obliged to. It's about who you know will do right for you, about who's got your best interests at heart and who will look after you and will do those right things. Because we do, I'm afraid, see some quite harrowing and horrible things that do happen when people pick the wrong person. So it really is important to take that step back and to really think it through and to think that there is outside help and support. You know, here at Alzheimer's Society, we've got a support line that can help if you just want to have that conversation or speak to one of our advisors, or there's other support out there if you just want to have that independent advice.
It might be useful to hear a bit more from you, Sam, on actually what is involved in being a power of attorney. What is it that you're looking after? What does it mean to look after somebody's, you know, finances and banking?
Okay, well, there's two types. So there's the financial type that we've mentioned. There's also a power of attorney for health and welfare, where that attorney will make decisions for somebody when they can't, around treatment, around where they might even live and receive care. But going back to the financial type that we're sort of, you know, looking more at today, those decisions, I will say, can be limited within a power of attorney document. And I think this is something a lot of people don't realise, is that you can write instructions and guidance for your attorneys. So if there's something in particular that you're very passionate about around your finances, so it might be that you want birthday presents to still be given, you know, to your grandchildren, or it might be that you still want to donate to a charity or a local community project that you might have done, you can actually list that for the attorneys, you know, to actually have to follow. So it is something to bear in mind. Where there is no guidance or instructions, attorneys in a roundabout way kind of have free rein of what they're doing with your money, and that is completely you know, that is complete financial management. This is obviously at a time where you've lost mental capacity to do this for yourselves. So that is around paying bills. So obviously mortgages, rent, utilities. Mm-hmm. Can also be around investments, savings, pensions. So it's managing all of that. It can also be around selling things. You know, for some, there may be a time where they may need to live in an alternative home. So it might be selling that property, managing, you know, all of those things that go with that. Also, we have people, you know, that receive benefits. It's also about receiving that those benefits, as well as all those everyday things. You know, you just need a new pair of shoes or a new dress or whatever it might be. You know, it's somebody that can also do that shopping for you, that, you know, the food and everything else. So it really is anything that involves any money, you know, leaving or entering our bank accounts or our purses. That's what an attorney is there for.
I feel like we've come back now and we're kind of circling back to the point of trust. And, you know, very sadly, there are many cases where power of attorney has been abused. And it's something I know you've seen through your work at the Alzheimer's Society. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, these are the cases I absolutely hate coming across my desk. And they're horrible to see. I mean, there is some cases that do make it to the courts, in which the Office of the Public Guardian themselves actually literally says enough is enough and we're going to the court about the actions of this attorney. And they are quite big cases. And we've seen some where there was some nieces that literally use their aunt's bank account to finance not just a brand new business, but their lifestyles of like Rolex watches, luxury cruises and things that you think only happen, you know, in the media and in TV programs. But this was a real life case of a lady that, you know, trusted her nieces to manage this for them.
Heartbreaking, isn't it?
It really is. We also see it on a daily basis where it might not be, you know, that much money as those court cases have shown, but it's enough to make a difference. And it's breaking that trust. That person trusted that attorney, but yet that attorney might choose, you know, to take an extra 20, 30 pounds when they go to the bank. And bearing in mind, attorneys shouldn't get paid. You know, non-professional attorneys, family, you know, attorneys do not get paid for their role as being an attorney. But yet we do hear those cases where attorneys are taking a little bit of money for themselves, or the attorney that buys themselves a car claiming it's to be an attorney, but actually they never use it to take the donor out. They use it for themselves on a daily basis.
Some really sad stories there. You really can't underline trust enough when it comes to power of attorney. And Grace, you mentioned earlier the investigation that you've been looking into, and you've uncovered a whole host of other issues surrounding power of attorney. Can you tell us a little bit more about the areas you wanted to dive into and why?
Yeah, sure. So basically, back in 2018, at which we decided to find out how people actually use these power of attorneys. You know, we're talking about they have been registered with the OPG, but actually how difficult or easy it is putting these documents into practice. You know, how can you exercise your power? So back in 2018, we surveyed attorneys to ask them how easy they found it to register with the banks. This is because before you actually use this document, you have to register it with every financial institution that the donor has an account with that you wish to use. You know, so we're talking bank accounts, savings accounts, anything like that. The document needs to be registered individually. Back in 2018, we found that attorneys really struggled with this. There was no consistency in registration. Different financial institutions allowed people to do, you know, the attorneys to do different things, different levels of access. So to approach this again, we decided to survey more than 1,500 attorneys in December to ask them about the hoops they had to jump through to register these crucial documents and the levels of access they had once they were registered. And we've been able to produce a table ranking the banks and building societies for ease of registration. And, you know, with this survey, we've also had comments from hundreds of attorneys, and they've told us about the difficulties that they may have faced within the last 3 years.
Super important research. And in a moment, we'll be back with more on this, the struggles people are facing, the problems that currently exist when it comes to actually using your power of attorney, as well as the best and worst banks to deal with, all after this quick break.
What is happening to supermarket prices? Do own label brands taste good? What's the best supermarket? What's the worst? How do I spend less on my weekly shop? Are there ways I can shop smarter? Should I just be growing my own veg? How do I even grow veg? Wine to pair with spag ball?
When life gives you questions, get answers at which.co.uk.
So, Grace, we've heard how people can take advantage of the power of attorney system, some particularly harrowing accounts by Sam. But as you've already mentioned, our research has found problems with the system itself, hasn't it?
We have uncovered quite a few difficulties that attorneys in our survey experienced. So it's worth pointing out that we surveyed which members who were attorneys and the general public. So we had a real blend of people. So as you said, we wanted to ask them the problems that they face when it came to registering and when it actually came to using the document. So one of the common frustrations that came up is that each bank or building society has its own process for registration. So some may involve providing them with an original or certified copy. Some providers allow you to do it online. Some you can only do it by branch or by post. Some will do it in a matter of minutes. Some it can take up to 15 days. Out of the 21 banks and building societies that we looked at, only 9 allowed you to do this process online. So already, one huge issue that came up was the ones that did insist it was via a branch. And lots of attorneys were quick to point out to us that the branch closures we've seen in recent years really led to them struggling to do this, that some of them had to wait weeks for an appointment. Some of them had to travel much further to find the nearest branch. So that was one of the main issues that came up with registration. Now, as I said earlier, we were able to rank banks on this. And if you go on our website, actually, I've gathered data from all of the banks and building societies on how you can register and how long it should take once documents are received. So if anyone's interested in reading all of that, you can head over to our website.
We'll pop a link in the description of today's show. Yeah.
We were able to rank 16 providers in the end. So these were the providers that we had a large enough sample size to report on. And we found that the top providers for the ease of registration were Coventry Building Society, Nationwide, and Yorkshire Building Society. And at the bottom, we had Post Office Money and the Cooperative Bank. As I said earlier, a common frustration was that each had its own process for registration and the fact that delays were made worse by branch closures. And one more issue to do with registration is that in 2020, the Office of the Public Guardian launched a digital service which allowed attorneys and donors in England and Wales to share details of their lasting power of attorney with banks and other organisations online via a secure access code. Now, this is great because it cut the need out for an in-person visit during the pandemic. But more than half of the attorneys we surveyed were not aware of the online tool, and 1 in 6 of those who were aware of it had successfully used it. So this is understandable, as the service can only be used by those who have registered an LPA since January 2016. But this is one thing that we've noticed since in 2018. You know, this is something that should have made the lives easier, and it has for the people that used it. They said it was great and it worked really well, but it's still not it's still not working as well as it could be.
So once you've got your power of attorney registered, you've gone through all that rigmarole potentially. The struggles don't stop there, do they? You know, Grace, what are you up against when it finally comes to actually putting your power of attorney into use?
So once registration is complete, it should mean that attorneys can access and manage their donor's account with ease. But sadly, again, this is not the case, because not every bank will give attorneys the same level of access as the donor. So one attorney told us the bank would not allow internet access and would only deal with written correspondence sent by post. But another said, as I live about 3 hours away from the person of whom I hold power of attorney, it's obviously extremely annoying to have to visit a branch to carry something out. Now, almost all the banks surveyed did give attorneys access to online banking, which is great, but not all of them would give mobile banking. You know, in Nationwide's case, it only gave online access if the attorney was also a customer themselves. So this would mean they'd have to set up their own account with Nationwide. And, you know, with the case of HSBC, attorneys could only have access to online banking if the donor didn't. So if the donor still has capacity, they might want their own online banking access, but only one of you can have it. So we also saw issues with opening and closing new accounts. So I spoke to someone and he's constantly trying to open new savings accounts because for his mother-in-law. And he described to me as an absolute nightmare of obstruction. So he said this was made worse by the fact his mother-in-law had no passport or driving license, as many elderly people, you know, don't at that age. And she'd moved in with family, so she didn't have council tax utility bills in her own name because she'd moved somewhere else. So, you know, he was having issues with that. I spoke to another person who'd was having issues closing accounts, and he actually had to get his solicitor to intervene because he could not have a savings account closed down. And that took absolutely months to sort out. And another thing we found was a real lack of knowledge with the staff. So we found multiple examples where an organisation insisted on speaking to the donor in person. One attorney told us, one bank I dealt with asked to speak directly with my mother. At the time, she was very ill with multiple forms of dementia, had lost capacity, could not speak, and no longer knew who I was. The person to whom I was speaking at the bank was insensitive and had no idea what power of attorney involved, even after the document had been registered. And another issue, which, you know, we'll come on to because we've spoken to someone about it, was when attorneys are appointed jointly and severally. So if you're appointed jointly with another attorney, you can only act together. But if you're appointed jointly and severally, you can make decisions together or on your own. And this fits in quite nicely to Anne, who we've spoken to.
Well, let's hear from Anne now, shall we? Here's Anne's story.
My sister and I were both attorneys for my mother. We were appointed a lasting power of attorney jointly and severally. Mum's bank was the cooperative bank, which had a branch near where she lived, and she was a long-standing customer. We both went into our branches to register the lasting power of attorney, which we did. And then it transpired that because my sister had gone in the day before me, her postal address was registered on the account. And we were only allowed one postal address. I was the only one that had inquired about online banking. So I was given access to online banking. But because my sister didn't ask at the time she registered, she didn't have access to online banking. We both queried this because it seemed we weren't acting jointly and severally. We both got a little bit of access, but not the full access that somebody running an account should have. The first time I paid the care home bill online as requested by the care home company, I got a text message saying that the payment had been flagged as potentially fraudulent because it was large and it was unusual, it being the first payment. And I was given a telephone number to ring. I phoned the number. Then it became a little bit surreal because they asked me for my telephone password. So I gave them what I thought was my telephone password. And they said, no, that's not your password. And it transpired they wanted my sister's telephone password and they would only speak to my sister on the phone. And I said, well, this is ludicrous. You've asked me to ring you and now you won't speak to me. I have to say, though, that I had a much better experience setting up some other accounts, which we had to do after Mum's house was sold. And the Coventry Building Society were excellent. They have a dedicated team who deal just with lasting power of attorney. And we all registered without going into a branch and they verified our identities automatically online. And they were a pleasure to deal with. So it can be done.
A huge thank you to Anne for sharing her story. Grace, it's an awful situation, you know, to have this on top of everything else you're having to deal with. And it does sound like Anne and her sister were put through, you know, some really awkward situations. You have spoken to the cooperative bank, though, haven't you? What did they tell you?
Yeah, we spoke to them about Anne, and we also spoke to them because of the ranking they came in our survey. They were actually one of the bottom you know, them along with post office money were at the bottom. So we spoke to them about our findings and they told us that it was extremely important to them that their customers felt supported when times were difficult. So they were really disappointed to see the results of the survey and about Anne's experience. And a spokesman added to me that they're working hard to make positive changes to the process of registering the power of attorney. They've been doing that since 2020, which has included enabling customers to actually upload certain documents online. And they said that throughout 2024, they're going to keep making improvements to further simplify the process.
Well, that is all good news in theory. Sam, I'd love to hear more from you on this. You know, it does sound like financial institutions are falling short here. Is it something that you've come across often?
It is, yes. I have to say, I've been working at the Alzheimer's Society for nearly 15 years now, and it's something I've seen from day one all the way through to today. It keeps cropping up, and it is just so frustrating for families. They've gone through all of this process of making their application, of going through the registration with the Office of the Public Guardian. They get their document and they think, great, I can now do what I need to do for mum, for dad, you know, for whoever it might be. And then they just hit this big stumbling block at the bank. And we ourselves have tried working with banks over the years. And I have to say, things have slightly improved. I mean, I know the government have tried to do a lot as well. The Office of the Public Guardian have. But we still see this time and time again. And something really does need to be done. I mean, you said yourself, Lucia, that this often happens at a time that's so difficult anyway for families. You know, often families that, you know, their loved ones in hospital, they're receiving end of life care or treatment, they're in care homes, and this is the last thing people want to be dealing with.
And can I ask you then, it's a big question, I feel like, because it's a huge topic we're talking about and there's so much going on within it. It's obviously not working. What do you think could change or should change?
I think there needs to be more of a heavier hand placed on financial institutions. As said, I've been dealing with this area now myself, you know, for over 15 years, and not a lot has changed. And I think it needs to be something more said and done, and more as a just heavier way of doing it, rather than this kind of soft and gently approach of nudging banks to be doing different things. I think it actually needs to be some policy driven from higher up, saying that, you know, legally you should be doing this. You know, this person's got a legal power to do this. Why are you stopping them from doing that? I mean, I get that there has to be safeguards and protections to make sure that the donor, the person, is protected and their money's protected. But, you know, that's the whole point of the power of attorney, is that, you know, they're protecting themselves. And so, you know, the banks need to do something more, and it needs to be done more. I mean, one of the key things we've seen over the years is just a lack of awareness within banks themselves. And we've known of carers that, you know, might be sort of a going to a bank up in, say, Leeds, and the same branch, say, in Devon, will act differently and tell them something different, but yet it's the same bank. So you'd expect them to have the same policy across the whole nation. So again, it's things like that. I think it's building up staff awareness. You know, we're at a time as well where there's less branches of banks, which doesn't help at the best of times. So it'd be nice that, you know, there's more awareness of kind of the fact that you're cutting down that face-to-face contact. And, you know, if things are moving more online, then actually making sure those online processes work as well for people.
We really have covered a lot of ground today, and I'd just like to end on any advice for our listeners. Sam, would you like to take it first?
Yes, thank you. For me, I think the biggest thing to stress, especially sort of when it comes to, you know, people with dementia that we're here to support, is that you're not alone with this. There are so many organisations and charities and other groups that are there to provide support. Ourselves at the Alzheimer's Society, we have our support line, which is 0333 150 3456. Do contact us, and we also offer advice on setting up a lasting power of attorney. But I think it's wider than that. It's having that conversation about who you want your attorneys to be. It's also then about, you know, obviously the best way for you of making that application, about how you want to set things up, any guidance, and really thinking it through. But as I said, you're not alone to have to deal with that. And also as attorneys, you're not alone either. Again, we're here to support. There's other places, and, you know, we are there to advise and help where attorneys are having these struggles and dealing with this, because we do see it you know, I'm afraid to say, constantly. So mm. we are there if people want that help. So I think it's just reaching out and just remembering you're not alone, because we do know that people are doing this quite often in the most difficult of times. So if we can help in any way, do let us.
Thanks, Sam. Really important advice and work you're doing at the Alzheimer's Society. And Grace, what would you like to add to that?
Definitely have those difficult conversations early if you are the donor and you're thinking about who your attorneys might be. You know, speak to them about it. Let them know what it's going to involve. Maybe make a list of all your savings, current accounts, investment accounts. Gathering all the relevant paperwork and other important records in one place will really help speed things up. Having those difficult conversations early will definitely help you know if they're the best, you know, if they are the best person to be an attorney, what the role is going to involve. And if you get bad customer service, don't be afraid to challenge the staff. Some staff might not be experienced or fully trained, so politely challenge them if you need to, and don't be afraid to complain. Attorneys can go to the Financial Ombudsman Service if the donor has lost capacity, and in some cases it may give the donor compensation. I'm still in touch with an attorney that I spoke to actually for the investigation. They were having some issues moving, opening a savings account, and they've been awarded compensation now because they complained about the service they received. So I also think, like, don't put up with it if you're being fobbed off.
Oh, I can't thank you both enough for coming on the show today. We really have covered so much, and it's been a super important show. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks, Lucia, and thanks, Sam, again. That was really insightful.
Thank you both for welcoming me today.
Well, a huge thank you again to Sam and Grace for coming on the show today, and to you for listening to this week's episode of the Which Money podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please do hit subscribe to make sure you catch our new episodes as soon as they drop. For daily money news and advice, you can find us on social media at Which Money and online at which.co.uk/money. And we also have a free money newsletter, which is delivered to your inbox every Monday. To sign up, visit which.co.uk/money newsletter. This episode of the Which Money podcast was written by me, Lucia Ariano, alongside Rob Lily Jones, produced by me and Adrian Bradley, and edited by James Rowe.
You've probably heard of Which Magazine, our home of hard-hitting journalism and informative stories delivered directly to our members. There's our travel, money, and tech mags too. But did you know you can hear some of our best articles for free, available to listen to whenever you like? Each week on the Which Shorts podcast, we bring you a specially selected story, lovingly voiced and produced especially for you, on a whole range of fascinating topics. Just search Which Shorts wherever you're listening.